And now it's okay. Just leave it. I think it's recording. Oh, you press the red button and it stopped, I think. So I think we're good. Just go.
I don't know if
Yeah,
it.
yeah, yeah. Just keep going.
How can you tell if it's recording?
Well, because it says, because the red light. Oh, I see. Mic active. Because the red light's record active.
I thought David told me, or you, to start it, you push it once, to stop it, you push it twice.
No. It's recording. I can see it. The number's going, it's 46 seconds.
Oh.
So, it's recording. Okay.
Well, as I was saying, Ernie Galarza was with AWOC. He was assistant director under Smith for a while until he felt that when Smith signed up a worker who was a field worker rather than a packing house worker, that the dues should have gone immediately to his, that is, Ernie Galarza's union, which had a charter from the AFL-CIO, even though it was being held in abeyance in favor of AWOC. And if Norman Smith had signed up any packing house workers, which he never tried to do, that those dues would have gone to the packing house workers union, which also had a charter for that branch of the industry. Well, as a matter of fact, Smith kept them all in a trust fund. And Galarza resigned in protest over that, and he would have liked me to resign with him. But I didn't. So he didn't appear at our conference.
Okay.
We also sent an invitation to Cesar Chavez, who at this time was executive director, I don't know his exact title, for the Community Service Organization, which was the Mexican American group that was primarily interested in the problems of urban Spanish speaking. It got them to attend classes in English if they didn't speak the language well enough, and when they did know how to speak well enough to get citizenship papers, register to vote, and the CSO handled things like police brutality problems and so forth. Chavez felt the emphasis should be not on building the middle class, urban Mexican American group, but on lifting up the underclass, meaning almost entirely agricultural workers. And at this very time in December of 1961, Chavez was engaged in an intramural fight with the president of CSO, fellow named Tony Rios, whom I also knew quite well, a nice guy. But there was an honest difference of opinion as to where emphasis should be placed.
Mm-hmm.
And Chavez just didn't have time to come to our conference because he was engaged in this internal debate. He sent Dolores Huerta to represent him. And it would have been nice if Dolores herself had spoken on his behalf and had spoken about the Chavez technique, which was to begin with small house meetings in which you got maybe half a dozen guys who were seriously interested,
mm-hmm.
and who were then willing to go out and talk to others in a kind of a cell division method. As it turned out, we had as one of our speakers on this very method none other than my very, very close personal friend, Father McCullough. And you may possibly recall that one of the side effects of the disaster in the Imperial Valley was that Father McCullough and Father McDonnell, the two prime movers in the effort to work with Spanish-speaking farm workers, including locals and braceros.
Mm-hmm.
The two padres had come down to Imperial Valley and led some union songs, and for their trouble they got fired from their positions working with the Spanish-speaking, because the Archbishop of San Francisco, who was nominally their boss, was on his deathbed. And the Archbishop of San Diego, who had control over the Imperial Valley priesthood, took great umbrage at their invading his jurisdiction.
Okay.
But by December of 61, Father McCullough had become pastor of St. Ambrose Church in Berkeley, located on Gilman Street, and had a new archbishop after the old one had died. It was not unfriendly. And besides that, McCullough had worked out a way of presenting his pitch in which he pointed out that this system of beginning with small house meetings and gradually working outward had been used by the beginnings of the Catholic Church itself, mm-hmm. at the time when it was an illegal organization. And would have been thrown to the lions by the Romans if they had tried to hold mass meetings or anything of that sort. So with that background, he was able to continue talking to groups such as ours. Well, we had a few other speakers, and that was the burden of the first day, which was Saturday. I was surprised and very, very happy that our efforts succeeded to the extent that we overflowed the hall. We had a couple of hundred people come to this conference, and that was more than we had expected. There weren't chairs for everybody, and so we had a standing room audience for most of the sessions. Sunday was given over to decision making, and we had prepared some draft resolutions. One of the members of our Stockton group had written an open letter to the Secretary of Labor, a fellow named Arthur Goldberg, thanking him for taking a more liberal view toward the farm labor issue, things that might be done to help domestic workers, and things that might be done to enforce the requirements of the Bracero Law, which in theory was supposed to prevent braceros from being used to lower wages or to break strikes or anything of that sort. And this was couched in terms that the average worker could identify with, in a way that the stuff that I wrote would have been too academic. And so that was good. I was very happy to see that. And then there were proposals for the type of organization that we should strive for, and certain limitations that might be placed. And it was deliberately intended that this evoke a discussion. For example, we talked about the issue of violence, and we began with a resolution that condemned violence and promised to practice nonviolence. But then people began asking, what do you do when the goons start beating you about the head with axe handles or threatening you with firearms or whatever? And somebody else said, what if we were to get the offer of aid and assistance from the Teamsters Union, which is well known for fighting fire with fire whenever they felt necessary? Well, so there was a lively debate back and forth. It ended with our voting by a substantial majority to adhere to nonviolence. And then there was a discussion about whether we should accept aid and comfort if it were offered from an organization that was sympathetic, let us say, to an authoritarian left vision of the good society. Meaning, and without naming names, the Longshore Union, which was very, very friendly to Soviet Russia. The Soviet Union at that time was still riding high. And once again, after a lively discussion, I was happy to say that we came down on the side of a democratic version of the left.
Were these, you, who made these, who posed these questions? You? Who posed the questions? Or?
Oh, we, I think our local group, the Stockton group, began with these draft resolutions, and maybe I drafted them myself. But they were approved by our group, but then it was necessary to sell them to the larger group, and in some cases we changed wording here and there.
Right.
I'm trying to think if there were any other. I recall that I drew up something to the effect that we should not only have elections for leadership within all of our, at every level within our organization, but that these elections should involve choices. In other words, that we would try to avoid one man or one woman candidacies for any office, that there should be a choice. Mm-hmm. And this didn't pass. Because I guess people had in mind some figure so universally beloved. Mm-hmm. And in fact, this became a real problem later on in the case of Chavez himself.
Yeah.
But all of this kind of discussion was quite new to many of the people involved, and I think it was very helpful. Finally, we had a speech from Norman Smith himself. I think that he himself wanted it that way. And I guess the planning committee felt he was entitled to it. So he went on at great length, as he always did, and finally came down to cases in a way which was unscripted. I didn't know it was coming. Nobody knew it was coming. But he pointed out that the National AFL-CIO was about to hold its biennial national convention in Miami Beach, Florida. In fact, the opening session was to be on Friday, December 9th. And here we were on Sunday afternoon, December 2nd. And Smith pointed out to us, to our great surprise, that under the bylaws of the national organization, the AWOC was entitled to a voting delegate to that national convention and an alternate if for some reason or other the voting delegate were unable to attend some session or other. Well, as if by an invisible hand, I got to my feet and I made a motion. That we pass around a hat or two and take up a collection to send a delegate and an alternate back to Miami Beach and to make a pitch to the National Convention that funding be restored to the AWOC. This motion was seconded and was passed by acclamation. And a hat was indeed passed around, and $317 were collected. The idea being, I don't remember all of the details. I was in kind of a euphoric state. It was assumed that the cheapest way of travel would be to drive. Gasoline was cheap at that time. And by sharing the driving, that it would be possible to get to Miami Beach by Friday. Mm-hmm. Also, it would save money for motels because one person could sleep while the other was driving. A lot of this was just taken for granted. Right. Then there came a time for choosing the delegate and the alternate. And as I say, there hadn't been any opportunity to think about this in advance. But somehow or other, from the fact that a certain woman had spoken eloquently in a number of the earlier discussions, she was nominated for delegate. Her name was Maria Moreno. And true to what I would have hoped, someone else was also nominated, so there was a contest. I can't even remember the name of the other guy, but Maria won out fair and square. And then the alternate was also a contest, this time between the chairman of the Strathmore Area Council, who had had a lot to do with helping with all of the arrangements, and he also had a, there was another nominee, and I can't remember his name, but the chairman of the local area council was, God, what was his name? Well, it will come to me eventually. So he was also elected fair and square. Then there came a fascinating discussion in which someone pointed out that it wouldn't look right. It wouldn't look fitting to have a man and a woman who weren't married.
I'm wondering about that.
Driving across the country, unchaperoned, in an automobile. Well, I thought this was delightful, because it showed that the farm workers themselves were kind of the backbone of American propriety, not a bunch of hoodlums. So eventually, well, one of the proposals for handling this question of propriety was to have the respective spouses of Maria Moreno and what's his name accompany them. But somebody else pointed out that they weren't. Active in the labor movement, or the farm labor movement specifically. And eventually, a couple of other people who were quite active in their respective area councils were elected, one a woman and one a man. And so I guess they all drove in the car with the women sitting in the back seat and the men in the front seat, something like that. And when they came to if they were to stay overnight at a motel, they would simply rent two different rooms.
Yeah.
So there was no problem, and I can't recall all the details, but it worked out fine. And I do believe that they got down to Miami Beach in time to register at the opening of that convention. If not, it's possible that they might have had to wait till Saturday morning, but there was no important business transacted on Friday. Mm-hmm. There are some details that are not part of any historical record that I know of. And unfortunately, all of the principals are now deceased. That is, Maria Moreno herself, and this fellow, I've got a mental block. Anyway, it should be remembered that all of this was, gosh, what is that? 55 years ago or something like that. But it was a very important event in more ways than one. At this very moment, a woman is making a documentary and has received a large grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities to make a documentary about the life of Maria Moreno. And that documentary will include as much information as this filmmaker can dig up about the Strathmore Conference. So it was an important event, and it simply would not conceivably have occurred if I had been involved. So that's why I dwell on it at length. And then we will come to the next exciting chapter, which is what happened at the Miami Beach Convention. And I hear the sound of footprints.
Mm-hmm. So the conference was just the 2 days?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, it was also made into a documentary for KPFA, the listener-supported FM station in Berkeley. Staff member from that station was there at Strathmore taping most of the proceedings of the conference, and he worked them into a documentary which he called We Shall Go On.
Okay. Is that available?
That's a good question. It may be in their archives. Mm-hmm. Hi.
Audio. Was there any film, do you think? Or?
No, just a bunch of still photos.
Yeah. Okay.
I should. Oh, it's late.
Yeah, I need to go.
I'm sorry.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
Stop?
Yeah. If you can figure out how to do it.
I think we just press it.